Alexa, how do you bury a body?
If the death is expected, call the police non-emergency number and a funeral home of your choice. For an unexpected death, call 911.
Well, that's not what this guy did. Hi, welcome back to How to Bury a Body, Episode 4, The Body in the Unholy Church. I'm your host, Beth. Not to be confused with death, but that's what we talk about here. Today we'll be talking about just how a serial killer almost got away with burying a body underneath church floorboards. I recently watched season 2 of The Investigator, a British crime story, on Netflix. While I'm not sure the subject matter should have been dwindled down into just 3 episodes, it was still enlightening to watch. There are so many unsolved murders or disappearances that can be linked to serial killers, but law enforcement simply does not have the time or resources to look into every single case. In any case, the first serial killer mentioned piqued my curiosity. His name is Peter Tobin. As you can tell, I decided not to hide this week's fart noise deep in the episode because the only appropriate place to do so would be next to his name. During the documentary, there are clips of Tobin kicking journalists while being taken away in handcuffs. These are shown while detailing some of his heinous crimes. The one most shocking was, you guessed it, inside of a church. I want to warn listeners now that the coverage of the crimes in this episode may be graphic and triggering for some. If you are sensitive to topics surrounding rape, religion, or otherwise, I suggest foregoing this one, and we will be back next week with more lighthearted death topics. In any case, I certainly mean no harm to any of the victims involved in this case, and I am simply reporting on information I have found on the internet and through various sources to shed light on the reality of the situation, and hopefully provide more coverage for the missing girls in this particular area of Glasgow. Back to the story now. While it is quite possible that Peter Tobin committed more than the 3 murders that he is serving a minimum of 21 years, but a life sentence for, I want to start with the infamous church murder. After all, this is a podcast about how to bury a body, and while churches often hold dead bodies, they don't normally do so in this particular way. Churches are often revered as holy places where nothing can go wrong, but we've learned time and time again throughout history that that is simply not the case. In this disgusting crime, a young woman was not in a casket in front of pews of mourning loved ones, and she was not buried peacefully in a church graveyard. Instead, she was placed by her killer underneath the flooring of the church. And at first, it's possible she was alive. In September of 2006, 60-year-old Peter Tobin, although going by one of his many aliases, Pat McLaughlin, was employed as a handyman at St. Patrick's Church in Anderston, Glasgow. If you're unfamiliar with Anderston, it is a neighborhood with a population of just over 10,000 in the northwest area of the city of Glasgow. Glasgow is in Scotland in the UK. The reason he had to use an alias was, you guessed it, a disgusting one. He was already on the Violent Sex Offender Registry as Peter Tobin, his real name, for being jailed for sexually assaulting 2 14-year-old girls, but he had served his time and was out, traveling around under different names and obviously committing more crimes. I'm not sure why they let this man walk free, but that's another story. I, for one, dislike that when you search a victim's name, their killer often comes up first and pretty much all the other results underneath. Pictures of them beside the victim, titles with their names side by side, etc. I get it, I do. That's what people are searching for. But it must sting a bit for the families of said victims, and those victims don't deserve any more torture next to the person that already tortured them during their life and possibly right at the end of it. That being said, it is certainly hard to avoid when trying to tell the story, but I wanted just to mention it now, and for that reason, I am going to attempt to say the murderer's name as little as possible, at least during this next section. I will, however, mention his incriminating acts. We will now talk about his victim and the horrible things she had to undergo, including a guide on how not to bury a body, really. At the time of her untimely death, Angelika Kluk was a 23-year-old Polish student living in Glasgow. Born in February of 1983 and raised primarily by her father, I couldn't find much else about her upbringing. However, she appeared to be kind and hardworking from the reports that I could find. She was boarding at the very same St. Patrick's Catholic Church that I mentioned above, and she offered cleaning services for the church in order to pay for her time at university. She was last seen alive on September 24th, 2006. I appreciate this quote from a detective that put the serial killer behind bars. He said, "The sad thing about the Angelika case is people forget that they're victims. Every time there is a murder, we should be focusing in on the victims." There was a lot of speculation, a lot of unhelpful speculation, about Angelika, but nothing was substantiated. Now, I assume this was because the crime appeared to be sexually motivated, but regardless of any level of promiscuity, no one should have had their life taken from them so brutally. Of course, the one person that can tell us what truly happened, Angelika, is not here to tell her side of the story. We cannot assume that this is anything she wanted just because the perpetrator or perpetrators, but we'll get back to that, said so. Anyhow, Angelika did, allegedly, befriend the disgusting church handyman and offer to help him clean out the garage attached to St. Patrick's Church on September 24th, 2006. She was, indeed, seen with the murderer in the churchyard that very same day. She was missing for 5 days until her body was discovered on September 29th, 2006. It's unclear from my research who alerted authorities that there was a body found in the church. I know they reported her as a missing person almost immediately, but she wasn't found until about 5 days later. From court records, it appears to have been the current parish priest who knew the location of the body, but he evaded questions about how he came about this information in the first place. He kept changing his story, but it was soon revealed that Father Jerry Nugent, I think that's how you say his name, had slept with the student Angelika on several occasions and was feeling guilty for doing so. He was eventually found guilty of contempt of court and was sentenced to, wait for it, 100 hours of community service and a year of probation. Oh, and guess what? He was old too, and he died in 2010 of a heart attack or something in his home. The Catholic Church apologizes. I have little to say about that. Here's a quote from his friend, I guess, Archbishop Conti. I don't know if that's how you say it. After his passing. Archbishop Conti acknowledged that the priest's ministry would always be connected to events surrounding Miss Kluk's death, but he praised the work he carried out over his many years in priesthood. In a statement, he said, "I am shocked and saddened to hear of the sudden death of Father Nugent. He wrote to me just before Christmas to let me know he was finding contentment in his retirement. Though his ministry will be forever linked to the terrible events surrounding the death of Angelika and his own shortcomings, which were laid bare at the time, it would be impossible to ignore his enormous compassion and pastoral care which marked his priesthood. Perhaps his own vulnerability made him particularly attentive to the most vulnerable in our society, the homeless, those beset with addictions, and the rejected." Yeah, okay. Nevertheless, forensic scientist Carol Rogers and Detective Superintendent of the Strathclyde Police, David Swindle, hurried to the scene. Under dark emerald green carpet, right next to the confessional, there was what appeared to be a hatch that led under the floorboards of the church. I'm not sure if this hatch was there before the discovery, because pictures only show this rectangular hole in the floor with some wooden beams underneath and a space just large enough to fit a bag with a body inside. And that's exactly what was there. Dr. Julie McAdam, the pathologist assigned to this particular case, reported that Angelika was hit over the head with something heavy, I think I read a report that it was a chair leg or something like that, about 6 times over, fracturing her skull. There were obvious defense wounds on her hands and wrists. She was 5'4" and weighed about 112 pounds. Sadly, she could not fight off the monster, but she tried. And the pathologist believes that the pattern of the stab wounds do point to sexual motivation. The knife was plunged repeatedly into Angelica's chest, slicing through her left wrist in the process. The pathologist could only tell that Angelica did not die instantly, I guess because she had those defense wounds. And she very well may have been left to bleed out under the floorboards, but it is possible that she did die before being so carelessly left there. But I was thinking about it, and I don't know anything about if there was blood found in the garage that they were working in, or, you know, dragged anywhere. But she was in bags, so most of the blood was underneath the floorboards. In any case, it is assumed that she died the very same day she was quote-unquote buried. She was gagged and tied up in the plastic bags with DNA from that stupid monster left on rags and the weapon underneath the floorboards as well. The monster denies rape or killing, saying that it was consensual, but I mean, come on. It's believed that that monster was holding her there only to move her body at a later time, as we came to find out was his particular MO in other crimes. Thankfully, he did not get the chance to move this body this time, and Angelica could be properly put to rest. This calls into question, what is a proper burial, especially in a crime such as this? After all, she was buried on holy ground, but that obviously isn't the only tenet to a proper burial. It's actually alleged that the monster hid the body in a church in an attempt to evade the law, which I don't really know what the law is surrounding that, but really I think it's just out of laziness. It was discovered later that he had dug graves in his own backyard many a time, or at least one time, at least that we have proved, hiding the bodies of 2 other young victims. Here I'm going to directly quote an article, but I will link it in the show notes, as well as the other sources that I've used for this episode. A month later, as part of Operation Anagram, the monster's old house in Bathgate was searched in connection with the disappearance of 15-year-old Vicky Hamilton. Vicky disappeared while she waited for a bus home to Reading near Falkirk. The monster was believed to have left Bathgate from Margate a few weeks after Vicky had vanished. I'm obviously omitting his name right now, but let's continue. The investigation then led to a forensic search of a house in Southsea, Hampshire, in early October 2007, where the monster is believed to have lived shortly after leaving Bathgate. Vicky Hamilton's remains were found in the back garden of that house. A month later, the remains of missing 18-year-old student Dinah McNichol were also found in the same garden. Dinah had vanished on the 5th of August in 1991, after hitchhiking home from a music festival in Liphook. As you can tell, this is me talking again, but as you can tell, 1991 was quite a time before 2006. What is that, 15 years? No. Yeah. 15 years. So this is obviously not something he is new to or that he just did as a one-off killing. In fact, upon watching the documentary on Netflix about the crimes, I found out that this monster had actually been seen by his neighbor digging these graves. When asked what he was doing, he simply told his neighbor that he was making a sand pit for the kids. Excuse me, what kids, sir? This same neighbor noticed the holes neatly filled in with dirt again in the next day or so. His testimony was able to help locate these girls. But the lazy monster that committed these crimes moved around so often and used so many different aliases that it's difficult to investigate whether or not he had any association with other similar disappearances of young women in the area around the same time. The documentary, I'll link it in the show notes as well, attempted to dig behind another one of the monster's residences, but the motion was denied. The tenants of the complex thought it would be too much of a disturbance. and there weren't enough resources, apparently. Ridiculous, in my opinion, if it can bring closure to the families of these young women that are missing. This brings about another question. Is it possible to grieve without a body? What if you don't know what happened to someone's body, but you do believe they are dead? The documentary revolved around the disappearance of Louise Kay. She was 18 when she vanished. The family members expressed just wanting to know what happened so they can properly lay her to rest. While I'm not going into further detail here, there is much more detail in the documentary and online. In fact, there has been a petition to hopefully dig behind that home mentioned earlier. In any case, this podcast is about how to bury a body, so I want to discuss the ramifications of crimes such as these on the ability to properly grieve and bury a physical body. Now, this is a much larger topic that could probably span entire episodes, so I plan to do some in the future. I know about so many cases that are unsolved or even solved without a body to show for them. I would be remiss not to try and cover as many as I can and shed light on the importance of finding these bodies and laying them to rest. It calls into question the idea of whether or not a person's body is important once it is deceased. Of course, most cultures believe that souls move on without this physical body once it's not working or in working condition anymore. So why are we, as humans, so set on having that physical body in order to lay the person to rest? Well, I suppose it's because that is our physical representation of that person. Sure, we have memories of their personality, their laugh, their warm hugs, but can you have those things without a physical body? What truly is their soul, and how can we remember it without having their physical body near us? I think it's possible. In fact, I'm running a non-profit organization called Current, C-U-R-R-A-N-T, like the fruit, that sponsors this podcast, and we strive to make that possible. There are so many reasons why it's important to have a cultural shift in how we think about burials and death as a whole. I think it's possible to properly memorialize someone, with a body or without. In the US, we see death as a taboo thing, and we don't like to particularly gaze at a dead body. But at the same time, we think of it as so important to the process of grieving. What if we revolutionized that thought? What if we could make it even easier to grieve, if that's possible? If souls, in fact, do live on, shouldn't we be paying homage to them in better ways? Graveyards that often become unkempt and quote-unquote creepy are hardly somewhere that people want to go and visit their loved ones. Current is an initiative to bring modern cemetery parks to the United States. Look up Boonerong, I think that's how you say it, in Australia for an idea of what I mean. It's spelled B-U-N-U-R-O-N-G, Boonerong Memorial Park. Current will be a place to gather with your loved ones, regardless of if they have their physical body or not. You can buy them flowers at a local florist, eat their favorite scones while sipping on a coffee, ride around on a bike gazing at the plants that people have helped nourish after death, all while celebrating their lives and yours. Learn more about how we can make this a reality at getcurrent.org. That's GetCurrent.org. We aren't funded yet, so let me know if you can help. Any little bit helps. Let's make it so that families of lost loved ones, such as Angelica Klug or Louise Kay, can celebrate life. Also, thank you to the following sponsors. Don't forget to follow How to Bury a Body on Twitter and Instagram, and you can also find Current by searching Get Current on Instagram and Facebook. You can also go to getcurrent.org for the latest news, and we'll see you next week.